This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Jerry Willis.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Shannon Bream, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, January 24th, 2023. I'm Dave Anthony. Russia's war in Ukraine is now 11 months old, and there's no end in sight.
Russia's definitely been picking up the momentum. And if anything, now it's starting to look like an international game of chess of all of these different allies to Ukraine starting to give more advanced weaponry.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Crime has continued to rise in several major U.S. cities, including violent crime, even if murders and shootings fall. But statistics can feel a bit different when someone you know becomes a victim.
This was very brazen. I was not in a dark alley. I was in a full car, so they did not care. They felt very comfortable thinking that they could do this.
And I'm Tammy Bruce. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It was 11 months ago today when the bombs started falling on Ukraine and Russia's invasion began. And the war is very much still raging, with the U.S. very much involved.
This new security assistance package is worth up to $2.5 billion, and it's one of the largest yet.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin last Friday at a meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, which includes dozens of countries helping arm Ukraine. But its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, keeps asking for more, saying they need advanced weapons.
The supply of Ukraine with air defense systems must outpace Russia's next missile attacks. The supplies of Western tanks must outpace another invasion of Russian tanks.
But the U.S. is not willing to send in our advanced Abrams tanks. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says they are
very expensive to operate, very expensive to fuel, very expensive to maintain, and it requires a lot of training. So there's a lot that goes into that when we are talking about what we're going to do to support Ukraine.
Poland may send advanced Leopard 2 battle tanks, asking permission from Germany, which provided them. Additional help Ukraine is desperate for, its country torn up by this war.
It's quite a sad day for Ukrainians here.
Alex Hogan is a Fox News foreign correspondent now in the capital, Kyiv.
I've talked with people months ago who live here who were hoping that they wouldn't see this day, that things would have been resolved, that there would have been peace, life could have returned to normal. So now as we're hitting this 11-month mark, and as we look to next month when it will officially be 1 year, it's a hard realization for so many Ukrainians of how long this has lasted and realistically how long it will last with no end in sight.
Most of them by now probably know people who have been killed, civilians or wounded, or even troops, I would imagine.
Yeah, you have this brave face on a lot of people who are walking around, for example, the capital of Kyiv, where outwardly life seems very normal. And then when you talk to people on the individual level and ask them what this has been like for them, often they try to compartmentalize just to make it through another day without being as sad as you naturally would be. And that's a sentiment of loss that people anywhere in the world can empathize with. But so many people, of course, people that I met, people that I consistently work with here, they've lost brothers, sisters. One woman that I work with consistently, she lost her dad just to a heart attack, which is an unfortunate loss, which happens really anywhere, but then her mom is also fighting. So people are going about their normal day-to-day lives and the day-to-day grief that happens anywhere in the world, but then also living with this pain of the war and how much loss and the fear of more loss on top of that. It's an incredible burden that is, it shows the strength of people who can still then go to work, and you go through the city and you see people still cleaning their cars and doing their lawn and planting flowers and doing normal things, because it's what you have to do.
But I know that air raid sirens still come. There are still Russian missiles and drones that come through, right? People still go have to rush down to train stations, right, for shelter still.
They do. They do. It's a normal sound at this point. And depending on what city you're in, those sirens are taken more or less seriously. We went to Kharkiv last week. And there, when the sirens come on, it's a different energy in the city, because when a rocket is set off from Russia, it only takes about a minute to hit the city of Kharkiv. Here in Kyiv, people have a little bit more of a timeline of when they would need to get to a shelter. So depending on where you are in the country, that level of fear is definitely different.
Yeah, Kharkiv has been hit harder, right, as a city?
It has. The mayor says that they're still getting hit at least once a day. So the amount of destruction there, the devastation, the people who are still living without power, it was horrible to see. And so many people simply don't have any other options. So while they say they could go other places, they would be living in shelters. So if they're still living in their destroyed home without heat, without electricity, in their view, that's much better than the alternative.
Yeah, we know that there have been so many times that Russia has attacked infrastructure, trying to knock out power, trying to knock out water service. How bad is it now across the country, would you estimate?
That fluctuates. Often we're seeing about 30% of the country without power. But what really happens is that with these attacks on energy infrastructure, specifically, for example, 2 weeks ago, there were some major hits hitting six different regions, specifically energy infrastructure. And then what that does, as they try to rebuild and bring things back on board, all of these cities are doing sustained power cuts. So depending on what city you might be, Kharkiv, for example, on average, every citizen goes at least 6 hours without power if you're in a building that does have power, just to conserve. And right now I'm sitting in Kyiv. From where I am, you can't even see the skyline, even though it's the country's largest city, the capital. You can't see any other buildings. All of the lights are off. If you're walking through the streets, everything is dark. People walk along with flashlights, which is also dangerous in and of itself, and how icy the sidewalks can be. So it's common to see people with flashlights slipping and falling on the ground. And many people just stay home at night because of how dark it is.
Yeah, that is really hard to fathom. And of course, you're not in an area that is considered a daily war zone in Kyiv. But to the east, that fighting rages on. We've heard over the months that Ukraine had a counteroffensive, took back, liberated some areas. But in some parts of the country, Russia is actually making some gains, correct?
Yeah, Russia's definitely been picking up the momentum. And if anything, now it's starting to look like an international game of chess of all of these different allies to Ukraine starting to give more advanced weaponry. Of course, tanks have been the main call that Ukraine says will make a major difference in this potential counteroffensive by Ukraine to reclaim some of these territories. But right now, all of the fighting is centering around the eastern town of Bakhmut. Russia's managed to take some of these small towns surrounding Bakhmut in effort to try to move in on closer. The goal here is that if they were to take Bakhmut, they say they would be able to then move in and take more of the east. Bakhmut in and of itself isn't necessarily a strategically important town, but if anything, it's really become this symbol of winning the war, gaining momentum, because this town has been fought over for months and months. So while some of these smaller towns only had a couple hundred people living in them, maybe at the start of the invasion, far fewer now, these little towns are pawn moves to get closer to this prize now, which is seen as Bakhmut.
Now, that's in an area where Russia already annexed it, right? Claiming that it's already Russian territory, which I know the U.S. does. U.S. doesn't acknowledge that.
It does not. And Russia is saying that it's liberating all of these towns. Ukraine then going onto the offensive, trying to fight back and win back these territories. And that's really what's caused so much of the decimation of some of these towns that we've seen, is the continual fighting over these parts of Ukraine and the destruction that it creates. If you look at satellite images of what Bakhmut looks like right now, pretty much everything has been leveled. The photos are shocking of these buildings and these homes. And now you can just see the shell of what once was. So it's really hard to imagine how people are still living there, but there are people who still are there. Unfortunately, a lot of them, it's older women, widows who live there and who aren't going to leave.
Yeah, I mean, months and months ago, we were worried about Mariupol, right? That was a town that was under Russian attack like daily, and there was nothing left there. Are people still living with nothing in that area?
They are. And I think one thing to note between the difference of Mariupol and Bakhmut is that Mariupol was a major city, and Bakhmut is a very small town. So to see the same kind of destruction in these two very different types of places, it is a good comparison in the damage, but the amount of people who lived in Mariupol was far greater compared to the number of people that live in Bakhmut. And obviously, there's just not the same kinds of resources in a small little village that a city would have been able to provide. So they were able to shuttle in water and food to places like Bakhmut through international to Mariupol through international organizations. And there are still some humanitarian aid workers who are going to places like Bakhmut, but it's just become so dangerous at this point.
Months ago, I know, when all this started, you did some reporting over the border from Ukraine where people were fleeing, like in Poland, for instance. Has that exodus continued? Have some people come back? Do you know?
Yeah, so we have seen a lot of people come back, several millions of residents who went to other parts of Europe have since come back, which is great to see so many of them returning to the capital. But a lot of children that were brought overseas are still there. There's a lot of men that I've met here, whether it's in the government, other Ukrainian officials. They won't bring their family back. They're going to keep the kids in school for a year at least, get them settled so they're not constantly living with this back and forth. And just the unknown, even if it does seem safe in Kyiv, this is safer compared to the front line. But it's not the safe that anyone would want their kids to live in an ideal world. So if they can be other places, they are. I still keep in touch with some of those families. It's been a really challenging year. And I think when we think about the fact that people left, and it's easy to put them in our mind as they are someone that is accounted for and we can check their safe box, but there's so much trauma that they live with and they're still not fully settled. That's not their life. They'd still like to come home. So there's just this collateral damage and this collateral trauma that we see in so many different aspects of life and the continuation of what war does to a country.
Do the people you speak to still believe that that Ukraine can win? I mean, obviously, Russia has had a lot of casualties and did not have the success people thought might be the case when Russia first invaded. Do people there believe that this is going to be a victory that will drive Russia out?
Well, I think part of the mindset here in Ukraine, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has been so adamant in his messaging that we have to believe we're going to win. We have to stay united in the fact that we are going to win. And that's exactly what you hear from a lot of residents. So whether or not people truly do believe that, that's what they're telling themselves. And that's outwardly what they're saying, because the alternative is we're giving in, we're losing the war. All the people who have died, is it for nothing? So you don't ever really hear people talking about the idea of conceding territory or the thought of Russia winning. For them, that's just, it's not even a possibility that people seem to entertain.
Alex Hogan, Fox News foreign correspondent in Kyiv in Ukraine. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is Tammy Bruce with your Fox News commentary coming up.
During the pandemic, crime went up in a number of places. FBI crime stats in 2021 showed a 30% increase in murders over the year before. The murder rate since calmed down a bit, but the crime rate is still high in many places. One of the areas under intense scrutiny over the past few years has been New York, and the city's mayor, elected in the fall of 2021, is a former cop himself. Crime was a focus of Eric Adams' campaign. Earlier this month, the latest crime stats were released in the city, and they showed that while murders and shootings dropped in 2022 compared to the year before, overall major crimes across the board were up 22%.
We know we have more to do. New Yorkers must be safe based on the stats, and they must feel safe based on what they're seeing. That is my obligation, to ensure that safety is felt.
Well, it turns out one of our own was not safe this past weekend. Fox News meteorologist Adam Klotz was beaten on the subway early this Sunday morning after watching the Giants-Eagles game at a bar. He said he spoke up on behalf of an older gentleman who was being threatened by a group of teenagers who then turned their aggression toward him. He posted this video to Instagram after he went to the hospital.
They had me on the ground. Like, my ribs are all kind of bruised up too. They got their hits in. But that guy, he got out of there. He's fine. I got x-rays. I'm okay. This is all going to heal. So it's all good. You know what I mean? New York City.
Klotz's ability to downplay the attack is not surprising to anyone who has even just watched him on the Fox News channel. His signature deadpan sarcasm and throwaway one-liners will add levity to your day, I promise. But for all the talk of rising crime, it has been remarkably notable on the city's transportation system. Last year, subway crime rose 30%.
I was out on Saturday night watching the Giants game. They took a beat down, and then shortly after that, I took a beat down.
Adam Klotz is a meteorologist here at Fox News.
I got on the train in the Upper West Side. People are familiar with Manhattan, and I was heading south, and the train was not desolate whatsoever. You know, you could picture some spooky kind of scene where it felt like you were in a bad situation. It was not that. There had to be 30-plus people in the train car I was in. I was sitting on an end. There was a group of teens kind of lingering around me. There was an older gentleman kind of across the aisleway that I was looking at. One of the kids pulls out a joint and starts to light it. And with the lighter lit, puts the lit lighter in the man's hair. And it went up like an absolute matchbook. His hair was on fire. And he's frantically trying to knock the fire out of his own hair. And I'm like, whoa, you guys can't do that. And that quickly, the kid turned and he's like, what was that? You got a problem? I was like, yeah, you can't do that. And it was kind of like, you can't tell me what to do. Are you going to stop me? Are you going to stop me? And it was just that quick that the focus was entirely on me. And everyone's kind of, his buddies are all perking up behind, and the energy is on the rise. And I didn't do anything. I think I was being goaded into hitting him. But for one, I was outnumbered. And two, this is like a, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 year old. I'm not usually in the business of punching kids. And and then I catch a left, like a pretty good left hook. And a guy down there, he's like, you need to get off this train. We're at a stop. And I'm like, okay. And as I'm getting up, they try to hit me again once or twice. I get off the train, like the whole train, the whole subway car moves to a whole nother car. And I think that's the end of it. Like, whoa, that was wild. What's happening? My face is bleeding a little bit. The doors open at the next stop. And the whole group runs from one car to the new car that I'm in, and they jump me. And it's like no longer one guy in front of me or two guys in front of me. I am just totally jumped. I'm taken to the ground. I'm getting stomped. I'm getting kicked on. The thing that I remember so clearly is them saying, put him to sleep, put him to sleep. They wanted to knock me out. And then once you're unconscious and you're getting beaten, like who knows what will happen. So I was just really focused on trying to protect my head and my neck so that they couldn't hit me hard enough to knock me out.
Oh my God. I don't even know what I have questions prepared, but wow. I read that you'd said, or did you say that your side was actually much worse off than your face? Like how bad is it? How do you feel, you know, like 2 days later?
I mean, visually my face looks the worst because it got some cuts up around my eyes, but breathing is really difficult. My knee is incredibly swollen. Sleeping last night was really painful. I was waking up constantly. Any move just sent pain through my body because they got me on the ground. And when I said I was covering up my head because I didn't want to be knocked out, I was getting stomped on like a curb stomp. into the side, into my ribs, into my kidney, on my legs.
Have you gotten checked out? You don't have a broken rib?
I got a CAT scan and no concussions. I don't have any fractures in my head. My ribs bruised, but it's not broken. My knee, I think at the time, everything else, the adrenaline, I didn't appreciate. I didn't know that it was hurt. And today it's swollen up a lot, so I might have to go get that checked out.
There have since been reports that after this happened, the kids who were arrested, I think three out of the group, right, they were since released. I guess their parents were called. The NYPD says this is a misdemeanor, apparently, from what I'm reading. How does that make you feel, knowing that?
The information, like that information that you had, has come to me just like as slowly as it's come to anyone else. Like I don't have a lot of inside information on that yet, although I do have a detective's phone number that I plan on talking to a little bit later. They didn't even take them in. Like they got three of them and then those three kids just went home at night. So I do think it's a little like frustrating that I'm black and blue. I'm struggling to walk around. I went to a hospital. I'm probably going to have a deductible. Like this is going to cost me out of my pocket and it's going to cost me physically. And they just went home and went to bed.
After the attack on Klotz, the New York Post reported that the NYPD told them three suspects who were caught, two 15-year-olds and a 17-year-old, were released. That, quote, juvenile reports were prepared and their parents were called to pick them up. A spokesman told the Post nothing else could be done because this kind of assault, they determined, was a misdemeanor and because of their ages. The NYPD did not immediately respond to our email request for comment on this. The city law department, which prosecutes juveniles, did respond, writing, the person harmed in the case may pursue a complaint with the Department of Probation. The Department of Probation will determine whether to refer the case to the law department for investigation. Adam, we've been hearing about crime in New York over the past few years. Had you felt safe prior to this?
I have always felt pretty safe. I really have. I do know that things happen. I've always felt pretty safe. I noticed during COVID, I think why a lot of people did, it felt a little sketchier in almost every part of the city. But I thought maybe we were kind of coming back around, not entirely, but it was better. This was very brazen. I was not in a dark alley. I was in a full car, so they did not care. They felt very comfortable thinking that they could do this.
You said in the video, I think, where were these kids' parents? I mean, you'd hope that even at 16 or 17 years of age, it's pretty common to be out and about right on your own at that point. But you'd think if your parents aren't literally with you, that they've taught you, you don't beat people up. What do you mean, I guess, when you say where are these kids' parents, especially in light of the fact that you just noted how brazen this was?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, I said that on a Instagram video where I was poking a lot of fun at myself. I said, like, where are your parents? Don't let your kids come beat me up in the middle of the night anymore. Like, help me, parents. But the larger picture is like, where are the parents? Not like that night necessarily, but I was that age and I'm sure I was rambunctious, but I had a real like fear or respect or a little bit of a combination of both for people senior to me and just the rules of society and how we should carry ourselves in general. And it does seem as though that is missing right now.
You spoke up in that moment. It sounds like you had a gut reaction. You weren't like watching some slow moving situation unfold. You watched a man's hair catch fire, but you spoke up in defense of another human being and that aggression got turned on you. I think the natural question is, would you speak up again?
You kind of said it there. I don't think I had time to make a decision to do it or not to do it. Either that's something you're going to do or it's something you're not going to do. And since, I would just have to do it again. I couldn't sit there and just not say anything.
Do you think people generally, I mean, the final episode of Seinfeld was people don't speak up, right? People just let things happen. Do you think this is why people maybe don't speak up or that more people should speak up? Like, it's such a fresh incident, but are you reflecting on sort of like how humanity generally should react to those things or does typically react to those moments?
I feel like this situation is so difficult because do I think we should speak up and look out for each other? I do think we should. But then when you're on that train and you didn't speak up and the guy who did speak up is me and you saw what happened to me, why would the lesson that you leave from that be, oh, I should speak up more? The lesson in the kids and everybody, it's no one's going to care. Like no one cares. So why would that be the lesson you left? Like, oh, yeah, that was the right thing to do. I'm going to do that next time. I don't think a lot of people would think that makes sense.
I think maybe if there's some common agreement among like all of humanity, because it's a numbers game, right? If you're outnumbered, you don't speak up. But if everybody sort of agrees, all right, we're going to handle this, there would have to be some agreement in place societally, I guess.
It needs to run. Yeah, I agree. It needs to run so much deeper than it would have. Like if 10 people said something, then nothing would have happened. But one person saying something,
Are you annoyed that no one spoke up for you?
Well, I don't know. No, I don't know. I mean, I get it, right? Because like, look what happened. This is where I'm really torn. I really am torn on that. People did a lot of little things to try to help me. As soon as they were gone, everyone was back there. Like, are you okay? We're calling the cops. Someone hit the emergency brake. They were trying to get me help, but no one was going to subject themselves to violence on my behalf, which I suppose makes sense. You know, I don't have hard feelings.
Finally, Adam, I just want a little bit about the reaction you've received online. For those who don't necessarily watch you but are hearing you speak right now but haven't necessarily seen you interact on TV with our Fox News hosts, you are pretty hilarious, pretty cheeky. You always get a joke in, and you've kind of maintained that attitude online, even, you know, interacting with people about this incident who are sort of shocked that you are acting so, I guess, lighthearted a little bit is the proper word. I don't know. What, how is that?
I'm not British, but I like the word cheeky. I think that, I know I like that. I think that is kind of describes my personality. You know what? I forget those people. I really feel like I've seen that. Like, how can you be joking about something that's so serious? If those kids would have beaten the jokes out of me, then they would have really won. That is the way that they would have gotten me, but they didn't get me. I'm fine. I'm going to laugh at the fact that there are headlines that says weatherman viciously beaten by teenagers. Yes, that's a little embarrassing. If I can't laugh at that, then what are we doing? You know, like I want to do hard things and I want to do what's right and I want to smile and I want to joke and I want to have fun. And I don't think you have to be wandering around grumpy all the time to be able to do those things.
It might be too soon to ask this, and this is my real final question, but what do you do with this now? Like, does this change you? Do you do something in response to this, or do you just, you know,
that
be you?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. That one, it is too soon to know. I really don't know the answer. I mean, is this something that it changes me and it's something I want to continue to push and fight and help other people who are in this situation? And I certainly do. Or is it a really big, heavy weight to carry that I hope I can just lay down and get back to my normal life? I don't know.
Fox News meteorologist Adam Klotz, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tammy Bruce.
What's on your mind?
Some good news seems to be on the horizon. Former President Donald Trump told Fox News Digital that his team is asking Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, to reverse their ban and allow him access to both social media platforms. The New York Post obtained the letter sent by the Trump campaign to Meta leadership asking for the accounts to be unlocked. It read in part, "Every day that President Trump's political voice remains silenced furthers an inappropriate interference in the American political and election process," end quote. With all we know now, it's clear this was and is the point of the ban. Back in November, Elon Musk reinstated the Trump account on the Twitter platform. It was disappointing when, at the time, Trump and his representatives noted that he wasn't interested in going back to Twitter, that his platform, Truth Social, would be his sole interest. This was concerning, as any campaign for the presidency must utilize all access to the American people, including being on Twitter and Facebook. His interest in returning to Facebook is a very good sign that he and his team understand the importance of being on those platforms, especially for a man against whom legacy media will do all they can to limit and distort his message. With the Twitter files revelations, courtesy of Elon Musk's commitment to transparency, we have begun to comprehend the extent of government collusion with the old regime at Twitter. It is now undeniable that the suppression of information, suspension of individuals, and censorship of ideas was not well-meaning or meant to help improve the American experience. Part of what we've learned is many of the censorship decisions made by big tech were at the behest of the FBI and others with a partisan investment in controlling information and silencing political opponents. Naked political malevolence informed the Twitter censorship environment, and we should presume that the banning of then-President Donald Trump from Twitter and Facebook fit into that category. Hopefully, with the GOP-led House of Representatives planning to investigate the issue, we will learn the extent of the collusion between federal law enforcement agencies and social media. This is not a shallow errand, but an investigation into what many argue was an effort to disrupt and even subvert an American election via control of social mass media. After just 2 years of the Biden administration, we have learned just how aggressive the Democrats and the establishment itself remain committed to squashing the voice and relevance of ordinary Americans. No matter the pretext they use, Trump's influence and impact is the reason he was banned in the first place. With all that we have learned through the Twitter files, it's clear that action taken at behest of the FBI and other allies of the Democrats was meant to punish a political opponent and destabilize the information flow to the American people. All of this is geared to keeping us in the dark and unable to assess information with clarity and transparency. The goal of the left has always been to isolate people, to keep us from gathering and participating in society, to make sure we do not find out that our opinions matter and that we are not alone. Their desperation is so great, they have been reduced to smearing tens of millions of Americans as terrorists or bigots. Their effort to keep Trump from being able to reach the American people speaks to their commitment to strangling not just our freedom of expression, but freedom itself. This is why Trump's return to Twitter and Facebook matters. It's a shout from the highest town hall mountains that we are a free society, that the voices of ordinary Americans and their defenders matter, and it serves as a blow to the tiny tyrants who are on a mission to fundamentally transform our country.
This is Tammy Bruce.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.